and welcome to the Hoop Collective podcast. We talk about the NBA. It's Wednesday morning. A little bit late recording this week because of me. I was traveling. Joining us from the Bay Area, Oakland, California, is Anscape's Mark J. Spears. How's it going, Mark?
Man, it's amazing.
It's before 7 a.m. for you right now. You're squeezing this in before you get to the airport, and then Andrew Lopez is going to join us on the back end. So I appreciate you getting up early.
Yeah. And I'm going to go see him, right?
Yeah, you're going to New Orleans today.
Yeah. So I'll see Andrew tonight, actually. They played the Timberwolves.
Oh, they had a back-to-back. Yeah, they're pretty banged up right now. They had a tight loss last night. So we'll talk about that with him. But I wanted to give you some props because it's January. We're just a hair past midseason. But in the preseason, and then again, I think in the early season too, and I don't remember the exact dates, but definitely in the preseason, and I remember you kind of doubling down on it, you said Sacramento Kings are making the playoffs. And you had reasons for this. You told stories about some of the team building Mike Brown was doing. You told us about how much Domantas Sabonis was enjoying living there. And they got off to either an 0-4 start or a 1-4 start. And we checked back in with you, and you go, no, I'm sticking with it. And so here we are, January 25th, it is right now. The Kings, who just blew the Grizzlies out of the water the other night, they won 7 out of 8. That Ja didn't play in that game, but are in third place in the Western Conference. Actually, I'm sorry, I don't have, for some reason, my standings are messed up. They are in third place in the Western Conference. And they are not, standings are tightly packed behind them. You know, they're not assured of anything. They've missed the playoffs 16 years in a row. So we're not going to say anything is done. But I do think that it's worth pointing out that you, here we go. Now I've got the active standings. They are, as of right now, third in the Western Conference, two games ahead of New Orleans in fourth. And, this is really what you look at. They're 3.5 games up on the play-in. But they have 5 fewer losses, basically, than the teams that are inside the play-in line. So I look at it as kind of 5 games up. Good position, not home free. But Spears, the Kings are playing well. You saw this, and I'm going to acknowledge it right now.
Well, thank you. No, I just
thanks for listening, folks.
Hey, look.
He's mocking me by doing my Utah.
That's respect, because that was something you got that you saw in the same kind of vein, I guess, right? I just remember
it's one thing to have information and to sort of predict a transaction. It's another thing to predict breaking a 16-year playoff drought.
Yeah. And to your point, it hasn't happened yet, but every once in a while, there's a trade that's great for both teams. And I remember tweeting out after the Halliburton trade that I thought Sabonis was great for Sacramento. Got a lot of heat for that. People were upset feelings. It happens when there's trades and people are in love with players, and Halliburton's a player you should be in love with. Could be an all-star, but I just thought it was a good trade for both teams. Fox and Halliburton were really good together, but I think one of them needed to be with a big. And I had been a big fan of Sabonis for a while, and it was interesting. I actually became a fan of his. I saw him in college, but when I saw him play in India against the Kings, and he just absolutely destroyed him. And I was like, okay, this isn't the Gonzaga Sabonis that was slim, and he got his dad's body now. He's much more stronger, but he could still shoot. He sets great screens. Rebounds well, passes well, and I just felt like that with Fox, could work well. And so when they played their first game together after the trade, Kings won. They did play great together. And I remember Fox hugging Sabonis like Magic hugged Kareem after that first game. It was just like,
okay, we've just compared Sabonis and Fox to Kareem and Magic. No, okay, but just keep going.
I didn't compare him. I said he hugged him.
Okay, I know. All right. I'm just having fun.
But yeah, no, but go look at the video. It is like, whoa, he's really hugging this dude tough, man. And, but, you know, I had to give Monty credit, the GM.
Monty McNair.
I mean, they got also, you know, first they got Keegan Murray in the draft. Then they got like some little moves that kind of went under the radar for a lot of people, but not for me. And
yeah, there was a couple of things that happened. First off, they moved up slightly in the lottery to into fourth.
Yeah.
And then a lot of people thought that they might take Jaden Ivey and get another guard, but they believed in Keegan Murray. And they took him, and he's been good. He's great in summer league, and he's been good this season, good promising future. And then they, you know, they took advantage of a couple of other teams. Like, obviously, Fox and Sabonis are the headlines, right?
Yeah.
Because those guys are both possible all-stars. I don't know if they'll both make it, but one of them has got to.
Yeah.
So that's where you're going to see the most of the attention, and that's true. But then, so they jumped up with Keegan Murray, but then two things happen. One, the DeJounte Murray trade happens, and the Hawks are now over they're too expensive, too top-heavy money. They got too many perimeter players, so they basically get Kevin Huerter
for nothing,
for a discount. He gets a first round pick, but the pick is protected, and
this is a solid two guard, you know,
right? And he's their starter now, and they didn't have to give up a rotation player for him. Obviously, they give up the pick, but they bring that guy in, so that's an upgrade. And then Malik Monk. One, like, he wanted to leave the Lakers, or the Lakers didn't want to keep him, just with the way the Lakers had very limited rights on him, and they had no cap space, and they were a tax team, so they could only like basically pay him like $6 million, and it wasn't a fair foot.
Then keep in mind the De'Aaron Fox connection with him, you know.
I don't even know that connection.
Kentucky connection. They got
Kentucky. Kentucky. The big connection, right?
Yeah.
So
So then they kind of get Monk to Fox, right? To come. Right. To
it wasn't like they got like two guys in Monk and Huerter, who the other teams wanted to keep, but just because of other situations they had to let go. And Sacramento didn't really have to give much to get them both, so they bring those two guys in. And so you're right; those were little.
I remember little Brian. Do you remember their press conference? They had a press conference in Las Vegas for summer league for Monk and Huerter, and like nobody was there, like three people there, in that room, and both of them were saying, "Yeah, we're going to make the playoffs this year." And then that's kind of when I started thinking about it. Like, there was like, okay, let me. Why are they being this confident? Why are they feeling?
Well, with all due respect, Malik Monk played in Charlotte and the Lakers. I don't know if he's actually enjoyed a lot of success.
No, I get it. I get it, but they basically were kind of talking about the roster and how collectively they thought they had a playoff team. And then, you know, Harrison Barnes, man, won a championship. If he's your number three or four guy offensively, that's pretty good. I mean, he's capable of dropping 30 on any given night. And so I just thought collectively they had a great roster. And then I know Mike Brown real well, just like you know Mike Brown real well. And his first job, he had LeBron. That's a tough job, right? To have it's a blessing, but it's also a challenge to have such a big time player. Same with Kobe Bryant next. To me, Sacramento was the first time where Mike Brown got to build his own structure. And I think having coached under Steve Kerr, having put together the Nigerian basketball team from scratch and build that, I think helped him figure out how to best put this team together and build and bond this team. And he like took them to dinner in Napa, and he went and not only like go see Sabonis playing in Eurobasket, but goes and sees another player on their team who doesn't even play, you know, and in the Euroleague. And gosh, I forgot the guy's name. start. He's at the end of the bench.
By the way, I got. Multiple people reached out to me about Paolo Banchero.
Yeah.
Saying that the new pronunciation that you brought out to me was incorrect.
Okay.
And then I'm just telling you what
this guard said. He asked, hey, I'm going to get on that guard next time I go to Chase. And well, say, people, you sure he told you that? What I'm telling the people is, take it up with Paolo.
Okay.
Because this is all right. Apparently what he told the security guard.
Okay.
But
I just needed to slide that in there.
I'm going to get his Instagram. I'm going to get all that. I'm going to pass it on. And they can take it up with
I don't
him.
Want it. I don't want it.
I'm going to be like, here, look. Here's this whole thing right here. Look at him.
I don't want. I just wanted to acknowledge that I got the messages that were sent to me in various forms.
One of the ills of being a journalist is people get mad at the message.
To be continued.
Yes.
To be continued.
We will both see said players in Salt Lake City for NBA All-Star Weekend.
Yeah, we're going
to
get this
corner him and get it on audio for you to play on the podcast.
That's right. Okay, we're going to do that. I don't want to take the shine off the Kings here because that's where we're paying attention
to. But to finish up, no, I think Mike was a great choice for this team because they needed somebody that could give them structure. You know, Mike is very, very detailed. But this Mike Brown, to me, is also a lot more fun than the one you saw coach in L.A. and Cleveland, like a lot more laid back, which I think you got that from Steve Kerr. And so I just think this is a good fit. All these guys are a good fit together. There's thirst, there's hunger. And then Mike, I think, is also doing a good job of, lighting the beam is great. And, we look good, but we ain't done nothing yet. Like, I think he keeps it in perspective.
He used to be like
which
a total
disciple. I haven't touchdown dance too much yet. I got to make
just
it
acknowledging
sure it's
I'm giving you a January
I do a little
hat.
Thing here and there.
a little hip, a little shoulder.
The dance doesn't take place until they make it. Then there's a dance.
Yeah. So I did a piece on Mike Brown that ran Tuesday on ESPN.com about the way he's changed his coaching. When he first started coaching in Cleveland and then in LA, he was very much of a Greg Popovich disciple, pound the rock, defense. And he was a worker. He was a marathon coach guy, drill. He had these principles defensively that he wanted his teams to follow, and he was maniacal about it, and it led to success. I mean, I don't need to go through his whole resume. I do remember about his practice. So the Cavs opened their new practice facility. Now it's 15 years old or even older. But back then it was like the sparkling class of the league practice facility. It was 20 minutes away from their arena. That's where the team was based at. And midway through the first year with that facility, the Cavs players went to Mike and said, hey, can we start doing shoot-arounds, game day shoot-arounds back at the arena? Not at the facility. I'm like, wait a minute. Away from our great kitchen and everything here and away from our great weight room and all of our hydro facilities. We don't feel like we're getting enough. And it might've been LeBron. I don't know if it was LeBron, but it was a team veterans. We're not getting enough reps in the building. And we're feeling a disconnection from our arena. It's like, okay, well, we're going to move the shoot arounds on the day of the game away from our new $50 million practice facility into the arena. But that wasn't the truth. That wasn't why they wanted to move them. They wanted to move them because if you have shoot around at the arena, you're limited to 1 hour because shoot around starts at 10. And then at 11 o'clock, the visiting team comes in. You got to get off the floor. Them's the rules, right?
Yeah.
And that was because the Cavs were tired of long shoot arounds. They did that as a trick to force Mike to. And then Mike told me as part of this.
Does Mike this know was, this?
Yeah. He was the one who told me about it. So in the story, this wasn't in the story, but he told me about his first season when he went to Golden State as an assistant and he's doing his thing. And Andre Iguodala and some of the other veterans pull him aside and like, hey, Mike, relax a little bit, chill. And the way he developed, he was, you know, in the story I talk about, he talks about how sometimes there were days when he's with the Warriors and Steve Kerr where the most important thing Kerr wanted to get across was reinforcing a message, reinforcing an idea or a theme. And if that was more important than practice, then that was more important than practice. And so here's a guy who used to win games proudly in the playoffs, 76-73, 79-76. Obviously, that's an old NBA. That wouldn't happen today. But his team's second in offense, like 25th in defense. And you would never see that from Mike Brown. And his said his number one priority when he came there was to get them to be confident, because he would watch them on film, and he'd watch them in person, and they'd be in a game that could go either way. And because it said Sacramento on their chest, the other team was like, well, we're going to win this game. And they played like it. And the Kings were like, well, we're going to lose this game. And they played like it. And that the biggest thing for him, because he's like, look, we have a good team. I'm not looking at a team. He goes, the team had 30 wins last year. He looked at the talent. He's like, that's not 31 talent. We can do better than that.
Yeah.
And so getting them to believe has been a big thing. And so far they are. Before you, know you got to go.
Glad, wait, real yeah, go quick. Ahead. That's a very astute point you just made, because now I'm thinking about, remember that 0-4 start that you mentioned?
Yeah.
They weren't getting blown out. Those were like close losses where, you know, you scratch your head losses for them. And so when I watch them play now, it doesn't feel like you're watching the woe is me Kings. This is like a different brand, a more confident brand.
Just to be clear, it's not that Mike Brown's thrilled with them being at the bottom 10 in defense.
Yeah.
He's going to work on that. But his number one priority had to be to get these guys to have confidence. And the confidence that De'Aaron Fox has, he's never played with this much confidence. And it also might be it's his sixth season. You know, he's got the keys. They traded Halliburton. They didn't draft Jaden Ivey. They were like,
he's got a chip, man. He's got a real big chip on his shoulder, too.
And he's one of the top
three. For a lot of reasons.
He's one of the top three or four players to in clutch play this year, in clutch shooting and clutch scoring. And that's made a big difference. When your point guard, the guy who controls the ball, gets into the end of a game that can go either way and 100% believes. I mean, this is, to be honest with you, this is the thing about the Grizzlies. People talk about the Grizzlies. They get annoyed because the Grizzlies are very arrogant or confident. But like that, there is a value to that. Maybe there is there's diminishing returns. But when you get to the end of the game, you think Dez Bane or Dylan Brooks or John Morant don't believe. I mean, obviously now they're one of the best teams in the league. They're a legit contender. But even a year ago, you think they didn't believe? No, they believed that they could do it, and they have done it. This is, you know, the Kings need, you know, they needed a few things. They needed some better roster depth. They needed some more balanced roster. They needed, you know, but confidence is one of the things that they needed. Mike Brown identified that was the most important thing. He's focused on that, and it has been there's many factors, but it has been a strong factor in them turning around. Before you go, Spears, you got to go to the airport. Lopez is going to be here in a minute.
All right.
I want to ask you real quick about this Lakers trade with Rui Hachimura. I don't know how Hachimura is going to fit. To me, the bigger news this week is that Anthony Davis is going to come back tonight, I believe, is the plan, as long as he doesn't have any setbacks and warm-ups. And he's going to play limited minutes. And getting Anthony Davis back is more important than getting Rui Hachimura. But what I'll say about – so Rob Pelinka came out and gave a press conference before their game against the Clippers on Tuesday. It was a bad game for the Lakers. LeBron had the best three-point shooting game of his career at 9 threes. They still got beat by 20. But in that press conference, Pelinka said, you know, basically implied that they may not be done. And this is interesting to me, Spears, because when you trade for a guy who's a restricted free agent to be, you're not just trading for him. You're trading for him and demonstrating that you want to pay him. This is like when Philly traded for James Harden. They didn't just trade for James Harden. They traded for James Harden and the reality that they had to pay him. Now, he ended up taking a pay cut. We didn't know that was going to happen, but that was a factor in the trade. So in the Lakers, who are in position right now, if they hold on to Russell Westbrook, to be a cap space team, 30-plus million, maybe, I don't even – the sky's the limit for them if they just let Westbrook's $47 million come off the books. And for a while, that's what I thought they were intending to do. But now that they've traded for Rui Hachimura, not only they traded for him, they have traded for him. Like, look, maybe they won't end up signing him. But when you make the decision to trade for him, you're basically saying, we're going to try to trade for him and we're going to try to sign him. And the other thing is, I'm sure one of the players they're interested in free agency with money is probably Kyle Kuzma. And this trade opens more of a window for Kuzma to get paid by Washington. Now, whether or not Kuzma wants to stay there or not, I don't know. But that is part of the arithmetic here. So I wonder if the Lakers, and they say they're not finished, I wonder if the Lakers maybe change their approach a little bit with Westbrook. I don't say for sure, but it made me wonder and made other people in the league wonder too.
Yeah. Been watching Rui closely since his Gonzaga days. Actually saw one of his last games last week with Washington. Crazy thing to me, I'm like surprised Pelinka took Tommy Shepard's call, like after the Westbrook trade. Like, you want to do another trade with Washington?
They've done several big, you know, when they did the Anthony Davis trade and had to clear out space for him with Mo Wagner. And I don't remember who else was in the deal, but yeah, they've done several big trades.
Yeah, so trades. I you know what? Maybe they're looking at Rui's age and I got to see how it works. Like, I'm confused on how the fit is. Maybe it gives them somebody they feel like if Anthony is out, that he could kind of hold the fort down. But this isn't Miles Turner either, right? This is
no, he's got good size and he's athletic. So the Lakers definitely need athleticism and size, but he's not a.
And I thought they needed some depth in the front court.
No, for sure they do. And without
none just, you know, certainly hasn't been able to give anything to them since his arrival, whether it's just been injuries or logjam at guard. So I'm not one of those guys that are in love with second round picks anyway. You know, I'm not really like worried about what they gave up. But to your point, like, that's a free agent probably now, right? That's the guy they.
It's a free agent. I don't know if it's they're all their free agent. I do know this, that there were at least two other bona fide offers for Hachimura.
Yeah.
One of them was a three-team trade. And you know, I always say a three-team trade is a no-team trade. And one of them was another team that hasn't been mentioned as a Hachimura candidate yet publicly that I know of. And I'm not going to do it now because I don't have it 100% locked down. I don't mean to be evasive, but I know there were several other offers, and maybe the Wizards would say, oh, there were six other offers or weren't three, but I am told of at least two other offers. There was a bit of a calling it a bidding war might be aggressive, but there was multiple bids for Hachimura, and basically Rui was ready to move on. And they needed to clear out a log jam in their front court, and they like Kuzma. They want to pay Kuzma.
And I think, Kuzma, dare I say, is becoming as big a star in Washington as Beal has been. Like, he is, like really, like, I went to that game last week. The Kuz chants are going crazy. Washington has fallen in love with him. And I do think for Kuzma, this is a chance for him to perhaps even, you know, be a face of a franchise that he never got an opportunity to be close to being with the Lakers. I don't know if he wants to just keep changing teams. Like, he could be the man there.
That's true. Well, like, it depends. Like,
where else is he going to go, right? Like, where else is he going to, like, be the guy?
There are teams. He's got options this summer.
Yeah.
The thing about Beal is the Wizards have always – given him the sun, the moon, and the stars contractually. Yeah. They've given him maxes. They've given him extensions, favorable extensions to him. And now they gave him a no trade clause. Like, he has gotten the contractual platinum platter. Kuzma, if they want to keep him, they might have to give him maybe more money than anybody else does. So that's a question.
And the one name you haven't mentioned is Porzingis, right?
Who was eligible for an extension, who didn't play in Dallas on Tuesday night, and the Wizards won. They went 2-0 against Luka this year, which I don't think Porzingis played in either game, actually.
So what happens with him, right? I feel like Kuzma's of more interest for the Wizards to keep than Porzingis, respectfully.
Well, this decision, I think some people were like, oh, I wonder if the Wizards are going to sell their pieces off now. I go, no, this is, in my view, from what I understand, this is them clearing out space for Kuzma to thrive even more and clearing out dollars to pay him. All right, Spears, you got to go to the airport and go to New Orleans. Thanks for stopping by. We'll be tracking two things, Paolo Banchero and whether the Kings can make here.
Banchero.
Listen, man, if man, the Kings hey, make the playoffs. You know
what I could do? What time is it? It's too early. I was going to, like, call his mama. Hey, look, next time I'm on.
All right.
If we don't have an answer by then, I will have his mom ready to go on speakerphone, and we can ask her directly. How's that?
All right, great.
It wasn't so early we could do it right now, but it's 7 a.m. in Seattle.
I'm just going to say that, you know, I don't look at my Twitter mentions. So people, to get messages to me, it takes some effort.
Tell them to ask him. Tweet Paolo.
Listen, we're going to get to the bottom of this. I just never have I had, like, my girlfriend's brother's Italian cousin has got to get in touch with you. It, for some reason, it struck a chord. So I don't know.
Just a messenger. Just a messenger.
With respect, respect. Yeah. All right, Spears. Thank you. You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish. Yes, catch the clutch hits, strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems, but nothing on your roof. So who's ever up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-timey chimney sweeps, moody teenagers, girl-sinking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish. But you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, root, root with nothing on your roof. Yes, stream your team. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit directtv.com. Sign up today. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Now let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavily on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue and ready for the play. And boom, Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liquor, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely. All right, well, we've leapt over to New Orleans, where we're now Mark Spears' advanced team. And Andrew Lopez joining us from New Orleans. I hope you are prepared. We let Spears go so that he could get on a plane to come see you. So I hope you're making the requisite preparations for the godfather, Mark Spears, to get in there.
I am. Now I think it's four games and four nights for me. So I gotta make sure I get my rest in before Spears gets here.
I'm making you get up early for this. So you were just in Orlando for a couple games. Now, Spears and I have been in a good-natured back and forth about how to pronounce rookie Paolo
Banchero.
Okay. So the listeners are more up to date than you are because you didn't hear us talk. Just they know the way you said it. They know. That's all I'm going to leave it at that, is they know. All right. We'll talk about Orlando in a second. You're with the Pelicans as usual. You're with them last night. They lost to the Nuggets by one. They were way behind in that game and came back. No Zion, no Ingram. Who else was out?
Najee Marshall was out, who, if you go back maybe a couple months, that doesn't sound as bad, but he has been a solid starter for them in not having Brandon Ingram minutes, especially when kind of Herb Jones went out. Herb came back a couple games ago, but no Najee, no Brandon, no Z. And they fell behind by 19. We're actually able to take the lead in the final minute. Then Jokic hit a little floater in the lane. They were trying to do some switching on defense. Looked like they couldn't get back to him in time. And then CJ misses a three that would have put him up by two with a probably like four or five seconds left. Billy Hernan Gomez was actually underneath the basket wide open, but I think the angle to try for Herb Jones to try to get it there was kind of difficult. Herb apologized to Billy after the game, but they fought back, but that's kind of been their story, especially the last month or so, is they just haven't put together a full 48 minutes.
All right. They're banged up. You know, it's kind of like the Suns. You know, the Suns were like super duper crazy banged up, barely could feel the team. Signing guys off the street and like playing them 25 minutes like they did with Saben Lee. And like they're getting beat like every night. And people are like, oh my gosh, you know, the window is closed for the Suns. blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, you know, or maybe they're missing a couple of all NBA players and like a couple of really important guys, and maybe we'll just wait. And, you know, lo and behold, the Suns have won like, what is it, four in a row, I think now. And they're not even fully healthy. Booker's not back. The Suns all of a sudden got off the road, got to play some home games, got a couple of guys healthy. Cam Johnson's back. They've won four in a row, and now they're essentially tied for sixth. So this is what I'll say about the Pelicans too. Like, they're taking some losses right now. Just don't have a freak out about it. Okay. But that said, the reason I wanted to talk to you today is because Brandon Ingram has been out for 6 weeks with a toe injury.
We're at a full 2 months, I think, as of tomorrow.
Okay. Anybody listening to this podcast knows how much I think of Brandon Ingram. It's actually one of the, you know, storylines of the Western Conference that New Orleans was actually able to climb up this far without him. And it's partially because Zion was playing so well before he hurt his hamstring. Also, CJ McCollum is rounded into form, and some of their other young players are playing well. So look, toe injuries, these are things that like don't heal. And I am not a podiatrist, to be clear, but there are some toe injuries that are the result of trauma. And then there are some toe injuries that are something that you know, basketball players get over the course of time. And basketball players' feet, Andrew, you know this. It's a horror show. It's a horror show.
I think a lot of people have started to figure this out in recent weeks, where we've seen some pictures of guys in locker rooms. But no, NBA players' feet, it's not the prettiest thing in the world.
Yeah. And I would say that like I know that this sounds crazy. And when I first heard it, I kind of was like, what? But like one of the areas of study and focus for the physios, for the trainers, the athletic trainers, to be clear, they don't like it when you call them trainers, at the athletic trainers, for the sports science folks, right now, the hottest spot or one of the hottest spots is the big toe. There's a lot of study and effort going into the big toe right now. And there's
the great toe, if you're the great Pelicans.
Yes, that's what they do call it, that the great toe. And I mean, it has been, you know, it's not like it's a new idea, but like there's more techniques and things that are done with maintenance, strengthening, protecting the great toe because of this type of situation that is potentially, I mean, this, seriously, it's threatening the Pelicans season. So, yeah. Ingram, this is a, you know, protecting his toe and monitoring it and taking care of it, because this isn't as simple as he kicked somebody and it was sore for a few days. This is very clearly a significant issue. Have you talked to him at all? What has he said about it?
You know, it's kind of funny though. I was in, as I drove up to Orlando on Monday from Miami for Jonathan Isaac's game, that's when Brandon decided to talk. So
you missed him.
Of course. But obviously I listened back to it, and he talked about that. It's a pain issue. It's being able to push off. It's being able to feel like himself. And the one thing I will say about Brandon Ingram, since he dealt with the shoulder issue in Los Angeles with the blood clot, he has been, it's a couple of things. One, he's been very appreciative of being able to play the game of basketball. And see, now I'm talking like Brandon, because Brandon likes to say the game of basketball a lot. He says the word basketball. If you just go back and listen to any random Brandon Ingram interview, we just have to do things on the offensive and defensive end of the floor. He says basketball five times. It's just one of those things that you pick up as a writer.
This happens with golfers too, because I'm a golf fan. They like to put the word golf into the sentences many times. They never say the ball, the course, the hole. They always say, well, we played the golf course, you know, the golf ball, the golf hole. They love saying the word golf. And maybe Brandon is from that same spirit. He loves saying the word basketball.
Loves saying the word basketball. And so But he's talked about it's been a pain issue. And let's go back to, so November 25th is when he gets injured. He kicks the back. I think it was Dylan Brooks' foot. I could be wrong on that, but it was, he kicks the back of somebody's foot. And, you know, they are expecting at that point to be a day-to-day type thing. They get the imaging done. It presents as a contusion. So they're, okay, this is what we're going to do. Originally, he ramps up, you know, even, I don't even think they ever thought he was going to be out a couple weeks, but he starts his ramp-up process. He was going to play, I believe it was the second Phoenix game at home when they had, when they
had a baseball beat Phoenix.
Yeah. And that was the game after the Zion windmill dunk that, you know, everybody remembers. Things didn't feel right then. They go on this road trip. They're talking, I think it was Utah, Phoenix. It was that weird part of the schedule. It was Phoenix, Utah, Phoenix. And in that ramp up, something didn't feel right. And after that, he took a few weeks off and they've just kind of been slowly monitoring it. And Brandon knows, I think Brandon wants to just know he's 100% as much as he can be. I think at this point in the season, obviously guys are playing banged up. Guys are playing through a lot of things, but kind of when you mentioned it, it is your toe. It is so much. Can you get the right lift? Can you make the right cuts? Can you defend the right way? And I think he has just been in that process of trying to trust himself to get back to being able to play like Brandon Ingram. I don't think he wants to go out there and not play, you know, and be something that he feels like he can't go to one of his moves. And I think watching him the last night, Tuesday night, warming up prior to the Nuggets game, he started to hit some of his turnarounds that he does. And he was progressing more to, okay, now my pregame warmup is, let me just get a lot of threes up. Let me just get a lot of middies up to, let me work on the moves that I'm going to use in a game. And I think there is hope. There is optimism. I think Willie Green said the words, definitely hopeful that he will be able to return tonight against the Minnesota Timberwolves. That's Wednesday night. You're also looking at, you know, if he doesn't do it tonight, they're off tomorrow, off Friday. They host the Washington Wizards on Saturday. But I think if everything goes according to plan, the 2-month absence of Mr. Brandon Ingram should be over.
That was my concern, is that he's still not, he's still dealing with pain.
Yeah.
You know, that's the thing that, you know, that you get worried about. The other thing was, in the 15 games he played before he got hurt, he was having a great season. He was playing a little bit less. He was taking fewer shots, but obviously Zion coming back changes things.
In two of those games, he leaves the game. So when you only have 15 games, and in two of those games, you only play the first one, you play eight minutes, and the other you play 10.
That's why his minutes were down.
That makes sense. But I remember, like, weird.
He was shooting the heck out of it.
Yeah.
He was shooting his best three-point shooting of his career, like his best overall shooting since he was in since he's been in New Orleans. I mean, like, he was off to a really good start. So obviously there's going to be some time to get that hopefully going back again. But, you know, he was already, you know, because CJ started off in a CJ McCollum started off in a slump this year. But Ingram was great. And look, and if the Pelicans are at full strength and ifs and buts and blah, 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 I mean, they can win the West.
Yeah.
Okay.
100%.
You know, there have been some folks. I was talking to I don't want to say what his title is because it's easier to identify. The guy who's at the top of the organization of a team recently. It was actually when I was in Paris with Victor Wembanyama, which the stories will be starting to come soon on that. And I was sitting with this individual, and we were talking about the trade deadline, because that's what you do between January 1st and February 10th. And he goes, "The team I'm most interested in is the Pelicans. What are they going to do?" And I've talked about this before, but you know, the Pelicans have plus draft picks, plus they have the swap. If they can trade their pick, which comes with the Lakers swap this year. So
I will say trading that pick and the swap is a little bit more complicated than I think it's it, then in just doing it, I think there's a couple of layers to it. I've checked in on this because I was very curious, especially when you start hearing them in potential trade deals, trade partners. It gets very complicated for them to try and trade it and protect it and do all these different things. I would see them, if they are involved in trades, trying to get to future assets rather than trying to trade this, and give up your possible, you know, Victor ticket.
There you go. There you go. There you go. Now we've arrived also at the complication. I am one that's talked about the dream that it would be for them to acquire OG Anunoby.
Yes.
And how amazing that would be were OG Anunoby to become available. You know, I actually think that if OG Anunoby became available, that Memphis and New Orleans might go at each other in a fight to get him. Having said that, the latest information I have is OG Anunoby remains unavailable.
Right.
So, I think there's some interest in what Toronto may do, especially around Fred VanVleet because of his extension that they didn't come out. But there are a number of teams that are watching.
I was going to say, there are plenty of teams besides Memphis and New Orleans who are trying to see what Toronto wants to do.
Yes, and I'm not saying that Toronto hasn't received, unrequited offers for Anunoby. But to my knowledge, he is not being made available as yet by the Raptors. But that would be a player that if you were the Pelicans and the price was getting that swap, you may have to – mull your options over on that, but that's a hypothetical for now. There was an update on Zion Williamson yesterday, which was what?
They are, he will be reevaluated in 2 weeks. Everything is going as scheduled. I think this was always kind of the original timeline. I think we've seen this across the league right now. We're not going to say, oh, he's going to be out 4 to 6. We're going to say he's going to be reevaluated at this point. He's going to be reevaluated at this point. You know, we see what KD, like, everybody's reevaluated now before we just say, okay, he's out 6 weeks, 8 weeks, whatever it is. However, everything is going on schedule with Z. If they reevaluate him in 2 weeks, that would give them 4 games left prior to All-Star break. Would you want to bring him back for three
well,
games.
Well, what if he gets named an All-Star next week? So the All-Star starters are announced Thursday. There's going to be a little bit of drama, front courts in the both sides. Whoever the third front court guy is going to be a little bit of drama. I voted, by the way. I had a vote for the media portion of vote, 25%. And the tough call for me was the third West front court player. And if you listen to this podcast for the last few months, you will not be surprised when I announce here that I put Domantas Sabonis in as my third pick. There's a couple of easy slots, but the third one, and Zion, if he hadn't gotten hurt, would have been a strong contender there, but Zion did get hurt.
Right.
There's a number of different ways the third front court player can go. Anthony Davis got hurt. So, there's a couple of guys who would have been easier picks. But Zion is a contender to get one of those All-Star spots. The Western Conference is not deep. What if he gets named to his first All-Star game? What's he going to do about that?
With the second. He did sneak in the second year. And then he ended up being a starter in that game because Joel got placed in health and safety.
That was that game in Atlanta, right?
Doc had to look down the bench and go, all right, who's starting? Z, get in there. Let's go.
All right. I don't even think I watched that game. To be honest with you.
Also, All-Star break real quick. I just want to say I am very excited now that the NBA is going to make them pick teams 30 minutes before the game.
Yeah, that was announced yesterday.
I absolutely great idea. I mean, I know, players have talked about it. KD talked about it before. The fact that they're going to do it like live, I just want them to have them like lined up So we actually see, like,
if there's yeah, but last year the LeBron KD thing was amazing.
Yeah, I think the draft itself is great TV. It's fantastic. But actually watching them do it, I'm sure they'll still have that set up like in person right before. I think it's great.
But the Harden thing last year was like,
yes,
it was amazing.
Fantastic.
I mean, like, I guess it is. It is also here's why. Like, I don't really care about them, you know, not having, you know, having to be there, because, you know, some of it's going to be a manufactured response anyway, like, you know, but I like the fact that it allows for all maximum drama to happen, so that, like, anything that could happen in the league or could be said or traded or whatever, like, it allows for maximum drama to have happened right before that. Although last year was so much fun. I can't remember what KD was like. You got to have bigs in this league. You
know? Yes.
He was like taking Gobert out of Harden.
I think I was at a game when all that was going down, because I think I remember watching it like in the media section at a Pels game. And while we had all the TVs like turned on, like, remember, this is great. This is amazing.
Remember LeBron had that clipboard. He was laughing. And he's covering his face with the clipboard.
And KD's just standing.
and the guys on the, you know, the inside crew were like, you gotta have, I remember that, I can't remember if it was Gobert or whatever, it was like, you gotta have bigs.
Yeah,
I remember was... Kenny Smith was like, that's right, play checkers, but you play, or you play chess, not checkers, play chess, not checkers.
So, oh, just, man, fantastic, was, aside, that has already taken us off the rails here, but
yeah, so I, that was announced very on excited Tuesday that they're going to pick the teams right before the game. Which is an effort to get people to watch the pregame show, if you want the honest assessment of that.
But Z could be, I mean, you're right, Z could be in that. And I don't know if, like I said, if reevaluated in 2 weeks, gives him 4 games before the All-Star game, do you bring him back before that? Do you let him play an All-Star, or do you wait and, you know, you bring him back? I think it's Toronto, New York is their first road trip, you know, after All-Star, and, you know, Zion gets to go play in
Madison Square Garden. He loves the Garden. I'll never forget this. Somebody asked him, remember this? Were you there? This was in the
this was in the COVID times.
Okay. Somebody asked him about playing at the Garden, and he, you know, he does have, like, one of the greatest smiles in the league, Zion, right? And
sure,
he smiles. Yeah. Thank you for asking.
I love it. Yeah. So this is, I believe this was – this is this should be his first game in the Garden since that.
All right. Well, hopefully he gets healthy and everything's fine. By the way, before we move on to Jonathan Isaac, I watched, I think it was the Pelicans strength and conditioning coach posted a video of Willie Green.
Yes.
Throwing down a dunk in practice in Miami last week.
Yes.
Willie Green got up.
Willie Green, it was the end of practice, finished with a windmill. We were kind of joking with him about it the other day. He's like, oh, I was just, you know, trying to, you know. He's like, when you're in Miami, you know, the heat, and, you know, your body's a little looser. He's like, I don't know if I could have did that in Denver or Detroit or any other place. He's like, I was just feeling good after practice that day. But, yeah, Willie got up, threw down a windmill.
That begs the question, how many NBA coaches today could dunk?
Dunk or throw down a windmill?
Well, throw down a windmill. Can Monty Williams throw down a windmill right now?
I think Monty can dunk.
Yeah, he definitely could dunk. Throw down a windmill. For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers high-quality supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as access to product specialists who have the knowledge and experience to answer your toughest questions. Plus, their commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call or click Grainger.com or just stop by. Vivid Seats wants you to get to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seat Rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code HOOP. That's code HOOP, H-O-O-P. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats, experience it live.
Can we have an NBA coaches dunk contest? Can we add that to All-Star Weekend?
I mean, throw down a windmill. Well, Tibbs is throwing down a windmill, you know.
Oh, of course, no. Yeah.
I mean, well, how many coaches do we think can dunk today? Today? Like, can Jason Kidd still dunk?
I was going to say, yeah, Jay Kidd. I think Jay Kidd can still dunk.
Can Darvin Ham dunk?
Yeah.
Darvin Ham can dunk.
I mean, Alvin Gentry was throwing down dunks 4 or 5 years ago.
All right. I mean, I know he's in well, the he's not a head so, coach right now.
Right, but I'm saying, like, I feel good about
Chauncey. Is Chauncey throwing it down? Chauncey could still dunk.
Chauncey can get up there.
All right.
Chauncey might be, yeah. I'd like to see the NBA coaches dunk contest. Let's get that in the works. Maybe we do it in Summer League. So we'll
Joe Mazzulla can throw it down. Joe Mazzulla can throw it down.
We'll do it in Vegas at Summer League. So you know, all the heat can get there. They can get loosened up a little, right, loosened up a little bit.
But yeah, like if you gave Eric Spoelstra like a couple of weeks, I'll bet he could, you know, I don't know if he could do it right. Maybe he could. Maybe I'm insulting. Maybe he could. But
Pop's going to surprise us all. Pop's going to do like a two-hand back scratcher.
Pop's gonna hang on the. Pop's gonna hang on the rim.
Gonna hang on a rim and just stare. Just.
Oh my god. Anyway, so you were in Florida with the Pelicans, and then Jonathan Isaac came back and played it for his first time since August of 2020. You covered that game. You talked to him. He tore his ACL in August 4th, I think, 2020, in the bubble.
August 2nd, 2020.
It's an extremely long recovery. The Magic have obviously not been incentivized to rush him.
Right.
It's still a strange recovery timeline. You know, the idea was that he was going to be back for the start of the season. Here we are midway through. So I wondered if you could just tell us about what he said and what his teammates were like. You know, at one point was a really key player for them. They signed him to a pretty big contract extension after that injury. So just sort of take us into what that situation was like in Orlando the other night.
Yeah, it was, you know, hadn't played a game since August 2nd, hadn't played a game in front of fans in over 3 years. In fact, his last game at Amway Center was December 30th, 2019.
Whoa.
Oh my God. Also in that starting lineup night.
Because he got hurt before
he got the pandemic. Hurt. So what happened was he got hurt. He sprained his knee New Year's Day, 2020, missed the last 2 months before the, you know, COVID shut down the season. Then only played two games in the bubble and then tore his ACL there. I think Vooch, Evan Fournier, I forgot who one of the other starters was in that game for Orlando when he last played in Amway. But Fultz was there, and obviously Fultz played with him the other night. And only three guys were even on the team, I think, when he last played.
Oh my
so God. They are in the process of kind of easing him in.
You can say that. I don't think there's ever been a bigger ease in the history of easing. Yeah,
Jamal Mosley, who also could get up there. Jamal Mosley.
Oh, Jamal Mosley, he could throw it down.
Jamal can get up there. Like the other night, he was playing 8 to 10 minutes. You know,
Nate McMillan, is he still throwing it down?
Ooh, that might be a good one. Yeah. By next pod, we're gonna have like power rankings.
Okay.
This is going to be great. This is already great info for you and the Tims.
Yes.
Just tell them now to start preparing.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I'm considering it.
So Mosley even joked. They were like, how are you going to monitor his minutes? And Mosley just said strongly and started laughing. Like they know. Okay. So right. 8 to 10 minutes the other night, they played him in two stints toward the end of kind of late first quarter, late third quarter. And he looked like a guy who didn't play for a while in that first. Obviously, he played three games with the Lakeland Magic, their G League team, who really is right there. I mean, it's not that far. They even practice, I think, right there at the arena where they used to have the summer league games. Now there's a brand new facility, you know, maybe a block or two away. But
And that new facility, by the way, each gorgeous. Magic player has like their own small apartment.
It feels that way.
In the locker room. Like in New York City, it would be like $1,600 a month for what yes. they're for each it's, locker.
I got a chance to look to tour it a little bit. It is phenomenal. Like it is going to set a standard of what I think teams are going to have to do in terms of facilities. So Isaac is getting in there. He plays. He looks rusty in the first one. He actually he trips. He says it was a misstep because his first play, they get it down to him. Jaylen Brown, he thinks Jaylen's going to try to take a charge. Jaylen Brown just kind of backs up, kind of missteps, misses his first layup, comes back down, hits a turnaround. But he joked, I mean, he played, I think, 4.5 minutes in the first stint. And he's like, I couldn't talk by the end of the first stint. He's like, I was breathing so heavy. And you could tell just how comfortable he got in the second stint, hit a couple of threes. Got a couple of steals, had one that the last play he makes, he gets the steal toward the top. It's a fast break. He hands it off to Paolo. Paolo finishes it, you know, with a dunk. And, you know, 10 minutes, 10 points, 4 of 7 shooting. You could tell he wanted to get some nerves out in the first stint. The second stint was much better. His teammates are cheering him on. They're all wearing Jonathan Isaac shirts.
Oh, really?
You know, into the game. They, you know, it was his number one with Isaac in it. So, and I think the biggest thing was he admitted.
That's important though. Like it's important after all this. Yeah. And, you know, he's been I don't want to get into this because we talk about the NBA in here, but he's been a bit controversial. Some of the stuff that's happened that he said off the court. So it's interesting that he, to me, that his team, I mean, I'm not saying they're going to like not care, but like that they're right. rallying around him for this.
They were, I mean, Cole Anthony's coming in, like there's a picture of like Jonathan Isaac, like just coming in his regular, you know, gear. And then everybody's coming in these shirts. Cole Anthony's right there, you know, trying to take pictures with him. They were supportive. Cole Anthony, he mentioned, he's like, look, when he was out, I mean, if you're having a good game, he's texting you. If you're going into a slump, he's texting you. He's trying to bring you encouragement. And they were there for him. And, you know, obviously they were trying to get him the ball early. They did, but I think the biggest thing to me was he admitted he didn't know if this day was going to come. You go through the ACL, you go through the hamstring injury that also, you know, lengthens this process, more injuries. And he admitted that he let that doubt kind of creep in at some point. And, you know, he leaned on his faith. I mean, he's like, this is what I'm made to do. This is why God made me. This is, you know, he put me on this stage to praise him. And he's like, that was kind of his reminder. He leaned on his family. He leaned on his church family. He leaned on his teammates. He leaned on his coaches to get to where he is today. And it was a situation where I think, you know, you could tell his teammates were there. You could tell his teammates were excited, you know, to get the guy who was a defensive player of the year candidate before he hurts his knee.
Three
years ago. He's not going to be that guy, but he did. He guarded Jason Tatum. He guarded Jaylen Brown. Like he was.
That's right.
They're like, all right, go back out there.
There was a reason why they gave this guy so much money. It's just you don't get guys who are that big and that athletic. You don't find them very often. And you know, Orlando has been trying to get players like this. It's why they drafted Mo Bamba, which it hasn't really worked out. It hasn't worked out. Period. But like they've been looking for players, you know, that these sort of athletic. You know, Bamba's bigger than Isaac, but these sort of athletic bigs is what they've wanted. It's one of the reasons why, like, you know, they were, you know, love the idea of Banchero because his incredible size with the rest of the size they already have, it's like sort of the modern team. Of course, Jabari Smith Jr. was also another guy who's had great size. You know, they weren't interested in Chet Holmgren though. But yeah, I mean, one of the things you project the Magic out. Okay, they've got probably the rookie of the year. Franz Wagner, another guy with really good size.
Franz Wagner has not played 5-on-5 with Jonathan Isaac yet because of how things have broken down. Talked to him in the locker room the other night, and he just is like, I'm just excited to play with him. He's like, and then in the game itself, Isaac's coming in for Franz, and then Franz is coming back in to take him out. So they, even in the game, they still haven't played 5-on-5 together. Wow.
Well, and look, I mean, like they're going to get another high draft pick, yep. You know? So
maybe the high draft pick.
That would be something. That would be something.
That would be a lot of fun.
Yeah. You know, Wembanyama doesn't watch NBA games. He watches footage of guys, YouTube clips and stuff. He studies Durant a lot. And he also was saying to me that, you know, as a fan of basketball, when you watch the league or when you not actually physically watch it, I mean, it's hard to watch the NBA games in Europe.
Right.
Yeah. You don't pay attention to the bottom. If you're a fan of, you know, if you're a fan of basketball, you're like, oh, what are the Grizzlies doing? What are the Celtics doing? You know, what are the Warriors doing? Oh, the Warriors are in the middle of the pack right now, but like, that's who you're paying attention to. You're not paying attention, you know, what's going on in Houston, you know? Right. And so like, you know, as an NBA fan, he's been an NBA fan since he was like 14, probably longer than that, but that was when he kind of knew he wanted to be an NBA player. And, you know, he's watched the top of the league, you know, so it's a little different, even though it's his life. But that, having said all that, he's obviously aware of what's going on down at the bottom. I just don't think he's necessarily studying teams like the Magic that closely. He's got his own team he's playing for right now.
Right.
But, you know, when you let yourself think a bit, because Wembanyama isn't necessarily a center. I mean, I think he will probably play center, but it's kind of like Chet Holmgren. They're not quite the same. Wembanyama plays a little bit more inside. They're trying to play him more inside in that league over there. In that league over there, they've stopped putting centers on him, and they've started putting like the strong power forwards on him.
Yeah,
you know, the strongest forward you got, you put on him, even if he's given up 8 inches, because you just fight him. But, you know, when you start thinking about where he might fit, I mean, if you let yourself think about Wembanyama, you know, the Magic, you know, getting Wembanyama, like, I mean, you know, you look ahead. I mean, the team that was scary was the Thunder, but the Thunder have played so well. Right. They just snapped the Nuggets winning streak the other night in Denver. They're probably out of the mix right now.
Probably so.
But all right. Well, yeah, go check out Andrew's coverage of Isaac's return. It's interesting. We'll be keeping an eye on that situation and on the getting healthy Pelicans, but specifically Brandon Ingram tonight. So thank you, Andrew.
Definitely hopeful. Definitely hopeful for Definitely Brandon hopeful. Ingram tonight.
Yeah. Brandon Ingram can throw down a windmill. That I
definitely
am,
yes.
That I am sure of.
He and Zion can definitely get those done.
Yes. Yes, he can. All right. Thank you to Jackson and Bruce, neither of whom I think can throw down a windmill, but we love them just the same. Thank you, Listen Hoop Collective. We'll be talking to you on Friday with the Tims. Have a good day. Take care.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.